My name is Mike Elgin, and this is the FatCast. Well, the FatCast is back. I'm happy to report that I've brought back my beloved podcast, and I've changed the format completely. What was happening in the past was that I was doing an interview in every episode. That was great. I enjoyed doing the interviews, but Skype is the medium by which most of us podcasters do interviews over the phone, or you know, when the person isn't in front of us, and it's a terrible experience. It causes this delay or a lag, which makes the conversations uncomfortable. Even if you adjust the lag in editing, you still have the discomfort. So I got rid of that format, and it was especially bad because I travel all the time. So I'm very often in a place with a bad Wi-Fi connection or some other problem that prevents Skype interviews from being elegant and graceful. So I got rid of that, still doing the interviews, talking to people and learning as much as I can from as many people as I can. But I've transformed the FatCast into a different kind of podcast. Probably no more Skype interviews. Probably going to do some interviews when I can talk to people in person. When I'm traveling, often that isn't possible because the people that I want to talk to are usually not where I am. For example, right now, I'm in the middle of Provence in a beautiful little town, and there's literally nobody here to talk to about tech that I know of. So I'm not going to do an interview. But I have a lot to say, a lot to talk about, a lot to bring your attention to. And so I've changed the format of the FatCast to a different format. And I hope you like it. I certainly am excited about doing it. So here we go. Let's do the new FatCast. I've been obsessing lately about something that I call the predictive internet, and I think that Google is really at the forefront of this this new phenomenon or this new idea, or maybe it's not that new of an idea, but it's certainly new to users who are getting the benefits of predictive internet applications. I started thinking about this recently when Google started beta testing a new tool called Reply. And basically what Reply does is that it's something you use with an app. I think initially it'll work with Hangouts and Slack, WhatsApp, Line, WeChat, Facebook Messenger, and Twitter. And basically when people contact you and ask you a question or request something from you, Reply will offer up, using machine learning, most likely three replies, where you can say, yeah, that sounds fine, or you can say, okay, whatever, whatever the reply is that it comes up with. And if you like one of those replies, if one of those replies is what you wanted to say, then you can just tap on it or click on it and off it goes, and you didn't type anything. You just chose a reply. Now, it's predicting what you want to reply, and then it's making it easy for you to do what you were going to do anyway, which is say, okay, comma, thanks, period, you know, whatever the reply is. If that sounds like Google Smart Replies, which those of you who use Inbox, Gmail, Allo, etc., then you're right. It's pretty much what it is. It's Google Smart Replies for third-party apps. And again, I imagine Google eventually wants to put this in all kinds of apps and make replying much easier. It's a great idea. But it's based on this idea of Google using machine learning / artificial intelligence to predict what you're going to do for great benefit. Coincidentally, we got another bit of news last week about Google's predictive web surfing. So basically, they filed a patent for a system that will predict what you're going to do online. Let's say you go to a website, and based on that website, based on your history of searching, based on all kinds of information about how your mouse is hovering above a link or whatever, it'll just go ahead and say, okay, you know what, this person is going to go to this, they're about to click on this link. I'm just going to load that page before they click on the link. It's predictive web surfing, I guess that's what I call it. I'm not sure that that's what Google calls it, but it's kind of like the I'm feeling lucky button that you find in Google search, but for every search engine result. And then it occurred to me that Google's been doing predictive AI for a long time in the most consumer of applications that they have, which is Google Predictive Photo Editing. So if you go to Google Photos, you'll notice that there's a tab there that's called Assistant. And if you click on that, you get a bunch of stuff that you didn't really build yourself. It takes your photos and your videos and it makes animations and collages and movies and all kinds of things. Essentially, Google is predicting what you want to do with your photos. It's doing them for you and saying, hey, here, we did this. If you want it, just click on this link to save it and you'll have it in your regular Google Photos collection. And it's brilliant. And of course it's artificial intelligence based. I mean, the idea that it not only selects the photo, it knows what's in the photo and edits it accordingly. It'll mostly make collages out of people's faces, for example. It will apply filters and regular photo editing to photos. Does all kinds of stuff, and it's pretty amazing. You know, people are used to it now because it's been around for a while, but it's still amazing. And then you think about all these things together. You think about reply. You think about their predictive surfing patent. You think about predictive photo editing in Google Photos. And it all adds up to a general Google trend toward what I call the predictive internet. So I think it makes sense that Google will continue to add predictive AI to everything we do to make things faster and easier, because of course Google is in the business of making things faster and easier. So you will use Google products, so you will look at Google ads, and so they will make trillions and trillions of dollars, and that's their business. And it's a great business. It's a predictive internet stuff, I think, is fantastic. I don't see any significant privacy implications. Obviously, there are privacy implications in Google Photos' ability to know who's in photos and the feature that enables someone else to identify you in a photo. People can complain about that. Not many people do, but you could complain about that as a legitimate privacy thing. But preloading pages, suggesting replies, and applying filters to your photos is a form of AI that's incredibly advanced and makes things a little easier and faster, and which doesn't really violate your privacy. So it's a cool thing. Look for new things coming out of Google that involve predictive AI, and also look at the things that they already have for predictive AI getting better at predicting. If my voice sounds especially clear in this podcast, especially compared to previous podcasts, the reason is that I'm using a microphone called MicMe. That's spelled M-I-K-M-E, and you can find the details about this product at MIKME.com. That's MicMe.com. And this is something that was loaned to me by the company. They are looking for people to review this product so that you can get some expert opinion on whether this is a great product or not. I think it's a great product, but I don't do audio-based reviews. That's not my area of expertise. But it occurred to me that I would go ahead and use the product, and you can listen for yourself. This is what the MicMe product can sound like. I'm sure that it could even be improved with some tweaking using the tools in the MicMe app, which I'm barely even touching. But it's a very cool mic. I like it personally because it's light and it's easy to sort of hold and so on. And yet it's a very high-tech, very professional quality sounding microphone, and it's not expensive. And so check it out at MIKME.com. That's MicMe.com, and see for yourself what you think about this microphone. If you're a vlogger, if you do vlogging with a smartphone, forget about it. You really probably should use this microphone. I mean, it's really great for adding really high quality audio to your video recording. You could have the video, you know, the person holding the phone to record the video could be, you know, 100 yards away, and with the MicMe microphone on the subject, it sounds just like it sounds right now, except, you know, you can't record, you know, if you're going to be recording video from your smartphone, then your vlog is going to suck. So you have to have a good microphone that's closer to the subject, and MicMe is probably optimized for that purpose. So check it out, mikme.com. Now it's time for Mike's List, my list of the most insane things that happened in the past week in the universe of technology. Mike's List is also the name of my newsletter, Mike's List, which you can find at elgin.com. So first of all, finally, there is a product for finding and identifying bats. So if you've got bats flying around in your house, you probably have bigger problems than which accessory to buy. But the Echo Meter Touch 2 is a brand new iPhone accessory that basically turns your iPhone into a bat detector. You can record the echolocations of bats as they fly around in your bedroom, and you can go, huh, that's interesting. It's this kind of bat. It's that kind of bat. You know, who knows what kind of... You know, it's a crazy product. I don't think they're going to be selling massive numbers of units, and it adds a big red giant plastic thing to the end of your iPhone. But if you're a bat enthusiast and you have serious bat questions, then you should get the Echo Meter Touch 2. Unfortunately, it's not for Android yet. So if you're a bat fan and have an Android phone, you might want to switch to iPhone so you can find those bats. All right. In the world of Apple, one of the craziest things that everybody's talking about, you know what? It's the only thing that people are talking about in the world of Apple right now. Apple releases products so infrequently that most of the time when you're talking about Apple stuff, you're talking about old news, old products at least, maybe new information about old products. But now there's a new product out called the HomePod, which is essentially often falsely characterized as an Amazon Echo for the Apple space that uses Siri instead of Alexa. And that's a bad description because it really doesn't function as a personal assistant. You can use Siri, but the Siri is there to control your music and control the sound and so on. So it's a lousy personal assistant appliance. It isn't a personal assistant appliance. It should be a personal assistant appliance, but it's not. It's a smart speaker. It's also not a particularly great speaker. I mean, for what it is and how much it costs, it sounds great, and it sounds great from any angle. So you don't have to point it at the person listening. It will sound the same no matter where you're standing in the room. But it doesn't sound as good as a lot of bigger, better speakers that you could buy. And so it's not a great personal assistant, and it's not a great speaker. It's not a great product unless you're a super fanboy and have money to burn. Anyway, the latest news on the HomePod is that this thing creates rings on wood furniture, just like a hot cup of coffee might do. I assume it's because of the heat produced by the HomePod. This ring is may or may not go away in a few days after you move your HomePod. But in any event, I joked on Twitter that somebody would come out with a HomePod coaster any second now. And then a few seconds later, Pat and Quill actually stepped up and started selling HomePod coasters. That's where we are, folks, in the world of Apple. Your smart speaker needs a dumb coaster. Well, one of the really craziest pieces of news that that I've heard recently is that an outfit called the Human Media Lab built a controller for controlling drone swarms, not just one drone, but controlling 10 drones or 8 drones in a swarm. And this is not, I don't believe this is designed to be an actual product. I think it's in a kind of a research project, but it's designed for children. So the idea is that it's an easy way for children to control drone swarms. And it uses Lego. So the top of this controller, you know, the shape of it is like the shape of a butterfly wings. And the top of the controller is like, you know, it's like a Lego brick surface. And then you place Legos, special Legos on top. And the sort of each Lego represents a different drone, and you put them in, you put the Legos in a pattern, and then the drones will fly in that pattern. And as you twist and turn and bend the controller, the drone swarm responds in real time exactly the same way that you're bending and twisting. Pretty fascinating. It's a new thing to worry about. You know, we can stop worrying about when the machines rise up to kill humanity, and we can start worrying about the children and their drone swarms coming after us. The worst greeting card I have ever even heard about is something called the never-ending Mother's Day card. So if you really have got something against mom, if you have mommy issues, this is a great card for the upcoming Mother's Day. Basically what happens is it's a greeting card that plays sound. That's nothing new. But when you open it, the sound it plays is the sound of a baby crying. And this continues for 3 hours. 3 hours of baby crying. There's a button that seems like if you press the button, you can stop the baby crying, but the button just makes it louder. At some point, mom will lose her shit and she will go nuts and rip this card in half. And when she does that, glitter comes out and gets all over the house, which, you know, it makes a big mess. And that's another reminder of what it's like to be a mother. All right. In the universe of smartphone follies, the Chinese smartphone giant Huawei got caught cheating. They were soliciting reviews on the Best Buy site for their Mate 10 Pro smartphone. The only problem is that the Mate 10 Pro isn't available. Nobody has actually used it. And so they were incentivizing these reviews by saying that you could be part of the beta program and actually get your hands on a smartphone. If you say how great this smartphone is, you might be able to get one. And so that's cheating. They got called out. It doesn't make them look good. It was kind of amateur hour. And it sounds to me like something that some other companies that will go unnamed might do, like OnePlus. Okay, so if you're always losing your smartphone around the house, there's a new Kickstarter product out there called the Findotron. It's basically a box with a button that when you press it, rings your phone so you can find it. I got to tell you, I love over-engineered solutions to simple problems. Well, I got some wacky websites for you. One is called Crying in Public. This is a map where New Yorkers can pinpoint on the map where they cried and why. There's another really interesting game on the Bloomberg News site, Bloomberg News, and it's an arcade game called American Mall Game, where you basically buy a mall and then you try to make business decisions that will keep that mall in business. This is a creative way for them to support their thesis that malls are dying and that we're going to soon enter a post-mall world, a world devoid of malls, of shopping malls. I disagree with this. I've written about this on Computer World. I actually think that what's happening is that some malls will go away. Malls that are boring will go away, but the malls that step up and provide creative experiences, high-end stores, lots of stuff to do, better food, and in short, act like they're not malls, and instead act like they are places that are doing interesting things that you could only do at that location. Those malls, I think, will succeed, but the regular, ordinary mall with a JCPenney on one end and a Sears on the other and a bunch of crappy stores in between, those are goners. And we can be glad that those are going away because those are boring retail experiences. Well, you may or may not have heard the news that Apple's new Apple Park spaceship headquarters building, which is, you know, as Steve Jobs bragged, it's got curved glass everywhere, probably more curved glass than any building in the world. It's just elegant and beautiful, and the glass is just breathtaking to look at. But employees are walking right into that glass. These employees are looking at their iPhones and tapping out text messages as they walk around the Apple headquarters building, and they just go and smack right into the glass. So the only solution so far is that some employees are putting post-it notes on the glass so you notice something is there and won't walk into it. But I don't think that the designers of this building envisioned post-it notes all over the glass. Just guessing. Finally, three Scottish university students created a device called the Sociometer, which visually meters Wi-Fi activity in a bar. So they have it installed. They have a prototype installed in a Scottish bar, and it's like a seismograph. So paper goes by, it's on a roller, and then there's a thing that measures amplitude, and the amplitude that they're measuring is essentially traffic over the Wi-Fi network. And the idea that they're implying here is that that is this horrible thing that people sit in bars and use their smartphones instead of being social. So instead of interacting with the real human beings that are right in front of them, they're instead horribly addicted to their smartphones. I kind of disagree with that whole premise. I mean, I don't think there's anything especially interesting in going to the same Scottish pub night after night, talking to the same drunk people night after night, when there are people you like better that you can connect with over the phone. Maybe your spouse, maybe your kids, you know, the people who are more important to you. Maybe there's more interesting things on the internet than the slurred, drunken speech of your pub buddies. I just don't think there's anything unethical, immoral, or impolite about using a smartphone in a public place. In fact, that sounds a lot like kind of how I make my living. So, I wish them luck. It's a fun idea. It's a good project. It seems well-crafted. I just kind of disagree with the idea that we're all supposed to feel horrible about using our smartphones in a pub. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you have any comments or questions or ideas, shoot me an email at mike@elgin.com. My name is Mike Elgin, and this is the FatCast.